Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Thursday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today, as usual. And, Jim, the good news today, and we've talked about it a little bit already in the past several days, is that the media, to this point at least, absolutely not ignoring this Clinton Foundation donation scandal as time goes on. Obviously, the Democrats and the Clintons in particular hoping that other news will push it out of the headlines. And obviously, we've had major news this week that have taken some attention away from it. But the New York Times is still on this story, and they're talking about a new revelation that suggests that the Clintons are not being honest, surprise, surprise, in explaining why 1,100 undisclosed donors were, in fact, undisclosed. They claim that these donors got a tax break if they went through this foundation and it helped them secure privacy. But some reporting, good reporting, suggests that these folks would have gotten a tax deduction even if they had donated directly to the Clinton Foundation. So once again, the Clinton Foundation is caught with its pants on fire here.
Greg, a good way of looking through the media coverage just today, just in the past 24 hours or so, both the New York Times and Globe doing stories on the Clinton Foundation and money issues. I particularly like the Globe article saying, talking about the Clinton Health Access Initiative. It's a organization with an office in Boston. And it makes very clear Hillary Clinton, when she was taking the job of State Department, had to make a pledge to disclose all foreign government donations. And no less than John Kerry talked about how important this was. And you know, that they needed this to ensure there'd be no perceptions of a conflict of interest. The document governing this was signed by Valerie Jarrett and Bruce Lindsay, who was running the Clinton Foundation at the time. And then it was promptly ignored. And there's just no way to say, oh, they sort of kept their... No, they just flat out didn't do it at all. Also, as mentioned in the Morning Jolt, there's an NPR article where Chelsea Clinton is bragging, look, we did get the Transparency International said we're among the most transparent foundations. False. Flat out false. Transparency International gave an award to the U.S. State Department while Hillary Clinton was there, not the Clinton Foundation. And I think either Chelsea Clinton is a shameless liar, always a strong possibility, or I think probably even a more intriguing option is that this is kind of a Freudian slip, and in the minds of Chelsea and Bill and Hillary, the Clinton Foundation and the U.S. State Department are one and the same. They use the two interchangeably because basically they're the same. You put money into one and you get policy decisions out of the next one. Two other great examples. Politico today has, quote, a handful of deep-pocketed donors are reconsidering their gifts to the Clinton Foundation amid mounting questions about how it's spending their money and suggestions of influence peddling. And they quote a donor who didn't want to be identified who said, we had some questions about how the money was being spent, and that was long before the problems were in the press. You probably think, oh my goodness, Greg, this is the worst day for the Clinton Foundation you could possibly imagine. But wait, there's more. In the Daily Beast, they point out that Hillary Clinton, in a speech last year at UCLA, said, businesses have taken advantage of unpaid internships to an extent that it is blocking the opportunities for young people to move on to paid employment. More businesses need to move their so-called interns to employees. Guess how much interns at the Clinton Foundation get paid, Greg?
I'm going to go with zero.
Nothing. Yes. And what's more, on the website, it says, look, the Clinton Foundation makes no promises or commitments of employment after the internship. No intern is entitled to a job at the conclusion of his or her internship experience. So exactly what she is denouncing in corporate America, she is practicing herself at the Clinton Foundation. This is a really terrible cycle. And for you and I and a lot of folks on the right who justifiably complain about the media, they are not doing the cursory check-the-box coverage of this. They are actually digging into this, and you're seeing institutions like the Daily Beast, NPR, New York Times, Boston Globe. I think they see bribery of the Secretary of State as a big story, and they are digging into it.
No, that's fantastic news, and it would be regardless of who is trading favors for donations in that position. So good on them for staying on the story, and I think there's going to be a whole lot more coming here as the smoke continues to pour out of this story. All right, on to the bad martini now. And Jim, you mentioned our current Secretary of State there, John Kerry, making sure that there was no conflict of interest when Hillary was Secretary of State. Don't have any evidence that he's got any conflicts of interest other than the fact that apparently he has no interest in ever confronting Iran again on anything. The latest story that unfolded this week is the Iranian seizure of a cargo vessel, the Maersk Tigris, as it came through the Straits of Hormuz into the Persian Gulf. It was flying the flag of the Marshall Islands, which we are sworn to defend. The captain ignored initially an Iranian vessel ordering it to pull into Iranian waters, but after a shot across the bow, it did that. So now this vessel, with I believe 34 crew members on board, is in Iranian custody. And of course, the U.S. State Department is furious, right? Not exactly.
Is it an act of piracy, act of violence?
I think is underway. I'm not going to apply an adjective to it right now. We are following the situation very carefully, but I'm not going to.
But do you condemn it?
We're gathering more information. I don't have a further reaction at this point.
Do you condemn it? We don't know. We're still gathering information here. That's Jeff Rathke, who's a State Department spokesman. He is one of the few there that can actually speak in complete sentences, but apparently the policy is still the same, Jim.
Basically, that response amounts to, nah, it's cool. You know, and here's the thing. What I am keeping baffled by, we've seen the Iranians continue chanting death to America during these negotiations. We have seen them practice and run an exercise in which they blew up a replica of a U.S. aircraft carrier during these negotiations. Now they are seizing Marshall Islands ships. Marshall Islands used to be a U.S. territory. They do not have their own navy. There's no way they're going to be able to protect their own country's ships. The State Department lawyers are saying, well, technically, we're not really legally obligated to come to their aid. Who else do you think is going to come to the aid of that crew? It's on us or it's nobody. And oh, by the way, I'd say everybody really ought to go back. You know, if I use the term tanker war, Greg, you're a smart guy. You recognize that, right? Back in the probably about 84 to 88, the U.S. and Iran and Iraq got into what you might say kind of a very limited skirmishes and a lot of very tense showdowns in the Persian Gulf over what Iran was doing over tanker traffic. And this was kind of meant as their effort to try to put the squeeze on Iraq and also kind of exert their power in the region. And the U.S. Navy started escorting ships. And there were, you know, a variety of limited but significant brief military conflicts between the U.S. forces and Iranian forces. One, I'm kind of struck at how much this has gotten forgotten. But two, kind of an indicator of this is how Iran rattles its saber. They don't always rattle it in the saber. You know, kind of like North Korea, sometimes their idea of rattling the saber is to pull it out and stab somebody. So the idea that we're not responding to any of these provocations from them, do you think they're going to calm down after this? Or do you think they're going to push their luck more? You know, it's a question, just a question of how long until they do something that ends up costing somebody their lives and ends up, you know, being something that really can't be ignored by us. And by not sending a strong signal now, we are simply setting the stage for a greater and probably more dangerous and deadly conflict later down the road.
Do you remember when not so long ago, if you really didn't want to do anything about a bad situation, you would issue a strongly worded statement? Now we're not even doing that.
Yeah, that's a very good point. We miss the days of those tough, strongly worded statements.
All right, on to the crazy martini now. And it's not often we defend the president of the United States, but I think he needs it here. And it's odd that it's once again coming from MSNBC. We talked about the unhinged Ed Schultz rant about free trade last week. This time it comes from Alex Wagner of Now. I mean, the president even went to Alex Wagner's wedding last year, I believe at taxpayer expense nonetheless. But the president, of course, had that statement about the Baltimore riots in the Rose Garden when he was at the press conference with the Japanese prime minister. There were some things we did not like, as we pointed out yesterday, and there were some things we did like in condemning the behavior, no matter what the alleged provocation. So he used the word thug. The White House press office did not take it back. And here is how Alex Wagner talked about it yesterday.
Brittany, you bring up this point in your writing today that it is as much a black-white issue as it is a black-black issue. I mean, Stephanie Rawlings-Blake is a black woman. Barack Obama is half black, half white, but is identified as a black president. And they're using the word thug. Now, Stephanie Rawlings-Blake has since said, has apologized. The president seems, if we're to believe the White House press secretary, defiantly sort of doubling down on, this is how I describe looters and people who perpetrate violence. So what is that conversation in the black community?
So, Jim, apparently, if you're scoring at home, if you're conservative and disagree with the president, you are racist. If you're liberal and disagree with the president, he's only half black.
A couple interesting things here. One is, I think Ace of Spades had a very smart observation in this. He said the president is not backing down from his statement. And while we might agree with it on the right, we should point out this is just because the president, as a blanket rule, never backs down from anything he says. Right? I mean, you've never heard him say, well, other than maybe when he kind of eventually reworded the police act stupidly. back in the very early days of his first term. When Barack Obama uses a word, he always later insists it was exactly the word he meant to use, and it means no more and no less or something. Look, what we're seeing here is a bit of goalpost shifting, because there are words that people have used to describe young African-American males that are bad. And you're not going to hear them on this podcast. They're bad, bad words. Now what they want to do is they want to extend the realm of words you're not allowed to use. And thug, which, oh, by the way, goes back to the cult on the Indian subcontinent of the thuggies and does not have any particular racial connotation, it's used to describe as thuggish behavior, violent behavior, threatening behavior, destructive behavior. There is no racial connotation to it. And so there's a part of it would say to the people who believe that word is objectionable, it should be stricken from our language. Look, you're the ones who are bringing the racial baggage to this. You are the ones who are insisting there's a racial connotation when it's not there. Alternately, what terms would they have people use for people who loot a CVS, burn down a CVS, burn down the senior center, stab holes in a fire hose, and smash police cars? What should we call that if not thuggish? Obviously, what this has become is this really passionate anti-free expression mentality running through this country, in which we're trying to chase Christine Hoff Sommers off Georgetown campuses, and we can't show American Sniper and all that kind of stuff. There is a concerted effort to limit what we are allowed to say, and we can't let this go on. And the idea that even the president of the United States is now considered a bad guy in their eyes indicates how round the bend these folks have gotten.
Just amazing. Jim, on that crazy note, we'll call time there. You are out tomorrow, so we'll talk to you again on Monday.
Yep, see you Monday, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today, and tune in again on Friday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.